Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Zach Easter of Indianola loved football. It was a passion he shared with his dad and brothers. He started playing tackle football when he was only 9 years old. And although he was small, he was driven to be the toughest, the best. He also quickly learned that if he admitted to the pain that followed a concussion, he wouldn't get to play. He learned to hide his pain, but concussion after concussion led to the end of his football career when he was a senior in high school. Even when he was done playing, the headaches continued along with scarier symptoms, confusion, forgetfulness, mood swings, and more. Family members and friends watched the Zach they knew disappear before their eyes. After Zach Easter died by suicide in December of 2015, tests proved what he had suspected. He was suffering from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, better known as CTE. It's a progressive degenerative disease of the brain found in people with a history of repetitive brain trauma. Even in death, he was determined to tell his story, and his final wish was that those who loved him would make sure people knew what had happened to him. His story is now told in the book Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. The author of the book is Reed Forgrave, a reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, but you may remember him from his work at the Des Moines Register. Coming up a little later in the hour, Brenda Easter, Zach's mom, and Allie Epperson, his former girlfriend, will be here. Reed Forgrave is here with me now. Hello, Reed.
Charity, thank you so much for having all of us on to talk about. I mean, this is a vital topic, and I think the biggest problem with this topic is that people don't want to talk about it. So I really appreciate you dedicating the time.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And for those who've been paying attention to this topic, we have heard about a number of professional football players over the years who have developed CTE, just terrible brain damage. A number of them have taken their own lives. But to have a young man, he played club football, he played junior high and high school football. What makes Zach's story so important?
Well, there are several things. One is what you just said. This is a guy who his final football game that he ever played was October of his senior year of high school. And you know Zach Easter. Even if you don't know Zach Easter, you know this type of person, that friendly kid who's a little bit devious, who gets into like completely harmless trouble, has this beautiful glint in his eye, really loves life, the type of kid. He's the boy next door, the kid that just loves everybody and that everyone loves him. And he went through this very harrowing path with a half dozen diagnosed concussions, plus who knows how many others through playing football pretty recklessly. But really what sets Zach, you know, as a journalist, what sets Zach's story apart for me is that he left behind these handwritten journals. He left behind a 39-page typewritten autobiography that details his history with concussions. He titled it Concussions, My Silent Struggle. And he left behind instructions for his parents, for his family, for his girlfriend. His instructions were, go tell my story. Tell my story so that other people don't have to suffer like I did. And so you combine all those things, a unique story about a timely topic where there's an urgency to this topic about America's favorite sport. And the fact that you are hearing Zach's words from beyond the grave and you have a family that is motivated in I think a truly courageous way to come out there and share the most painful moment that they will ever go through, something that will live with them forever. And not just share it, but share it in the most raw way possible, because they believe through this tragedy there will be good to come from it. That, to me, is why Zach's story is vital, and it's totally unique in this topic that we've heard so much about over the past decade. But I think there's been a lack of very real reporting and writing about everyday people. We hear about the Junior Seaus and the Mike Websters. We don't hear so much about the Zach Easters.
You first connected with Zach's family really shortly after Zach's death. When did you first learn about what had happened to Zach and realize this was a story that needed to be told?
Yeah, well, Zach died about a week before Christmas of 2015. And my family and I, we had lived in Iowa. I'd worked for the Des Moines Register. I'd been there for a decade. I met my wife in Iowa, had our first kid in Iowa. We love Iowa, miss Iowa. We had just moved up to Minneapolis a few months before. That's where my wife's parents are from. But a friend had passed on this obituary in the Des Moines Register. Again, it was just a couple days before Christmas. And I have this moment where I distinctly remember reading this obituary. And look, it's an obituary for a 24-year-old man who died by suicide. That is, by its very nature, heartbreaking. And then you see his smiling picture next to it. You read all this potential that Zach Easter had, that he'd been, he was in the Iowa National Guard and had been ranked the Soldier of the Year. He just graduated from college with a 4.0 GPA. He had this family that clearly loved him. But then the final paragraph of this obituary, it just stopped me in my tracks because it was so personal. And I'm just, if it's okay, I'm just going to read just a few sentences from this,
sure.
From this obituary. And it read like this. Zach was a selfless person. His last wish was to make sure that no one else has to struggle from head trauma like he did. It is important to Zach to tell his story about CTE, a disease he attempted to manage for years. And it goes on to describe the physical ailments and the brain struggles and the memory issues and the slurred speech and the blurred vision that he had. And I remember trying to call every contact that I had in Indianola to be like, I want to get in touch with Brenda Easter. And it might have been Christmas Eve when Brenda called me back. I was at my family's house in Pittsburgh, and we set up a time to meet a week later. And 2 weeks after Zach's death, I was sitting on their living room floor on a Sunday afternoon, the first Sunday of 2016, talking about his life, talking about his death with his parents, with one of his brothers, with his girlfriend, with a couple of family friends. And I spent 4 hours meeting with this family, and two things struck me. One was how motivated they were to tell this story and how motivated they were so soon after his death. I've dealt with lots of people going through tragedy and going through mourning, and it's very rare to have a family that has a reason to share that story and to do so in such an intimate way. And then the other part that struck me is, as we're talking, right behind me in their living room, there's the Packers-Vikings game on. It's Zach's dad's favorite team, the Vikings, against Zach's favorite team, the Packers. And this just underscored to me the feelings that America has towards football. And I don't think it's America hates football. I don't think it's America loves football. I think it's America's really torn about the sport. And look, even in Zach's dying days, he's still watching his Packers on Thanksgiving night in his family's basement with his girlfriend. He's still loving football. And yet he sees this as the sport that killed him. That's what Brenda Easter believes as well. It's a tortured relationship, I believe, that our country has with football. And there's really no easy answer to it. So that immediately all these big themes of Zach's life and his death were immediately apparent.
I think for people who are not football fans, and there are some out there that are just not fans of football, it may be hard to understand that kind of love and passion for this sport. But in addition to writing about Zach and writing about his family, you also explore our relationship with football. And it is such a deep part of our culture. Even so, going back way to the beginning, the violence of this game was a huge problem.
In 1905, so football started right after the Civil War, which, by the way, I don't think was a coincidence. That was a time where, you know, in those years after the Civil War, you come back from war. That was where you proved your manhood. This country's moving from an agrarian society to a more industrialized society. You're not living off the land as much. Football is a way to prove that you're a man. Go out there, be tough, rub dirt in it, and take a lap, young man. In 1905, football was so much more violent back then than it is today. I'm going to forget the exact number, but that year it was something like 34 people died playing football. Not died 30 years after playing football because of a degenerative brain disease. Died on the field. Died because of hits to the head. It was an incredibly violent sport back then. And Teddy Roosevelt, the president back then, convened a bunch of college presidents at the White House and said, look, you better get this fixed or football's going to go away. Out of that meeting at the White House came the organization that eventually became National Collegiate Athletic Association, NCAA. But even at that time, you hear Teddy Roosevelt talking about football. He's concerned about the violence, not because of the violence per se, not because all these people are dying, but he's concerned that football's going to go away. You better rein in this sport because I believe, this is Teddy Roosevelt talking, that this sport is so important to creating a strong nation of strong men, creating this world superpower that we've become. The tie-ins with football and the military especially, but to a lesser extent, football and corporate America, creating leaders is, I mean, that goes back to the beginning of this sport. My favorite quote in this book is when Teddy Roosevelt is talking about the possibility of his alma mater, Harvard, eliminating football. And he said, I don't want our boys to turn into mollycoddles. If there's, I'm not sure if that feels like a word Biden might use, but we don't have mollycoddles in our dictionary too much anymore. But that was a very real concern among this very paternalistic society back then, that sort of the feminization, the weakening of America. And we look at it now, and we call that toxic masculinity. But, for centuries of this country, that's kind of how we defined who we are, by being stronger and tougher than everyone else.
Well, and the language that Roosevelt was using is echoed in the language that we hear today, a language that I can't share on the air, but I can just hear those words coming out of coaches and others in this moment as well. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Reed Forgrave. He's the author of Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. It tells the story of Zach Easter, who was suffering from CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, from repeated concussions from playing football. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
This hour, we're talking about Zach Easter. He grew up in Indianola, Iowa. He loved football. He played football hard. And the sport that he loved resulted in head injury after head injury after head injury. He took his life when he was only 24 years old as the result of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. He suspected he had CTE, and that was confirmed after his death due to autopsy. His story is now told in the new book, Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy, by Reed Forgrave. And in just a few minutes, Brenda Easter, Zach's mom, and Allie Epperson, his former girlfriend, are also going to join the conversation. I'm talking with Reed Forgrave right now. And I also want to mention that although your book tour is not an in-person tour, there is a virtual event in partnership with Paige Turner's Books in Indianola, Iowa. Of course, Zach's hometown. That's coming up tomorrow at 7 p.m. And people can find out more about that on your website and also at Paige Turner's Books. And at CTE Hope as well, which is an organization founded by the Easter family in the wake of Zach's death. So, Reed, before the break, we were talking about our deep, deep relationship with football in this country. And of course, people who are part of that culture probably understand that really well, just that pull of this sport and all that it stands for so many of us. Let's talk about football and the Easter family, because, boy, they have that love and that drive and that passion for football.
I mean, they do. At least they did. It is very much challenged right now. Brenda can speak about her feelings, but I know when she's talked to me about football, the sense that I get is if she never watches another football game again, she'll be happy. She does want to make the sport safer. That is sort of one of the big goals of the foundation that they started, CTE Hope Foundation. But Zach's father, his brothers, they have a more, I think, nuanced view of this. Even Zach's girlfriend, Allie, obviously did not play football, but she grew up around football in that sort of small town milieu. And 1 year after Zach's death, Allie took Zach left her behind his final paycheck, and she took that money and she bought a ring to remember Zach by, sort of a wedding ring of sorts, frankly. She sees herself as along the lines of a widow because their relationship had gone back since high school. And then she took the rest of that money and she drove right before Christmas to Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin, with Zach's, one of his very best friends, his college roommate. And they went to a Green Bay Packers game. And Allie talks about it as a very complicated relationship because she wanted to go to this game to honor Zach. Zach loved the Packers. He loved football. He'd been to Green Bay a couple years before for the first time, been to Lambeau Field, this almost like this cathedral to this sport. And not just to the sport, but you think of toughness in football. You think about Vince Lombardi and the Green Bay Packers. And yet, Allie's at that game and she's cringing every time there's a hard hit on the field. I do think this family's views on football, it goes back generations. The Easter family has been on his father's side, has been in Iowa for seven generations, since before the Civil War, mostly on the same tract of land outside of Winterset. Zach's dad grew up on the farm out there, and farming and hunting and football, like those three things are sort of the definition of what it means to be an Easter man, to have the quote unquote Easter mentality. His dad played at Drake University, played Division I football. He was a coach at Simpson and then was a defensive coordinator for all three of his sons at Indianola High School. He is someone who for all his life has believed in the excitement of football, but also in the value of football helping create that traditional man, the Easter man. It's hard to, you know, we don't have too many small family farms anymore, like the farm that Miles Easter grew up on. Football is sort of a way that you can create that sort of toughness. And yet, I know Miles Easter, when he looks at football, it's a lot more difficult now than it was 5 years ago because you're not in that age of innocence. And our country isn't anymore either. When Zach graduated from high school in 2010, we weren't talking about CTE. We weren't talking about concussions. We sent our boys to play football, and maybe they'd break an ankle, and maybe they'd hurt their shoulder, but we didn't think their brain would be messed up with a degenerative brain disease. Now, I think the question is almost more difficult for parents because we know that football, and frankly, like not just football, contact sports in general, can cause some very serious problems. And we know that the science isn't there yet. It's very much, I mean, think of it as like cancer in the 1950s or 60s. It's going to take a long time for science, if it can do so, to sort of get its grips around how to figure out this very serious issue for young athletes.
Well, and we do know a lot more about diagnosing and treating concussions than we used to. But I think it's really important to underline here the fact that Zach figured out he had CTE on his own through Googling it, basically, and watching these documentaries about professional football players. He suspected that he had it, but nobody could actually definitively diagnose him with CTE when he was alive because there is no real method for diagnosis and there's no real treatment for it either, right?
Yeah, I mean, he self-diagnosed. He went to doctors who thought there's no way that you could have CTE, who denied the links between concussions and this horrible disease. And he went to doctors who were very well-educated about this. There's a doctor, he was out in Urbandale, named Dr. Sean Spooner, who plays a significant part in this book. And he had been in the Navy, and he had headed up, it was called, Concussion Restoration Center out in Afghanistan in 2010 or so. And this was for troops who had been injured, you know, a lot of IEDs and roadside bombs where you may not die from it, but you get rattled. And it was sort of a cutting edge way of thinking about medicine, where they brought together a bunch of doctors all under one roof and physical therapists and said, we need to have a holistic treatment. Sean Spooner just with Unity Point just opened up a specific concussion clinic in the suburbs, I believe this month, that is replicating that formula in Iowa, where it's bringing together doctors to treat concussions in a holistic manner. But it is incredibly difficult to diagnose this. Right now, you can only definitively diagnose it posthumously through an autopsy, the stuff that Dr. Bennett Amalu, also featured in this book, has done famously, starting with Mike Webster, the former Pittsburgh Steelers player, Hall of Famer, who was basically patient zero for CTE. But it's a very complex disease. Doctors described it to me as being so insidious because it hones in on your weaknesses. If you have pre-existing vision problems, CTE will hone in on that. If you have pre-existing mental health issues, CTE will hone in on that. And there are ways, and I don't want to sound completely hopeless about this at the same time. It is an insidious disease, and there are ways that you can manage it where you may not be the same person. Zach always talks about, I wish I were the same old Zach Easter that I used to be. He may not have been the same old Zach Easter, but there are ways that he could have managed this, could have figured out memory tricks, and lived a very fulfilling life despite having this disease. We're still a long way off. The brain is very much like the forefront of medicine, the frontier of medicine at this point. And when I've spoken with doctors, the phrase that I keep hearing is the infancy of the science. We have a long way to go, and that's why I think this foundation that Zach's family started up is so vital to this conversation.
I'm talking with Reed Forgrave. He's the author of Love, Zach, Small Town Football, and the Life and Death of an American Boy. And I want to bring Brenda Easter into the conversation now. She is Zach's mother and also one of the founders of CTE Hope. We'll bring Allie Epperson into the conversation, Zach's former girlfriend, here in just a moment. Brenda, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
And I just want to start by saying how really remarkable it is how open and dedicated you've been to sharing Zach's story. It's an incredibly brave thing to do, and thank you for doing this.
Well, you're welcome. It's easy to be brave when you have a son who was very brave and who gave you purpose. And I would say, you know, we lost to the degree that I hope no one ever has to when you lose a child. But we're grateful for the fact that Zach gave his purpose.
Let's talk about Zach. Reed has already told us a little bit about him. He was bright and fun-loving and friendly and always had a smile. But tell us about the Zach that you knew as his mom. Tell me about what made him special.
You know, I would have to say that Zach was very compassionate. He was he put up that tough exterior because I think that was important, and it probably is important for many middle school and high school college students. But inside, he was just a little teddy bear. He really, truly cared about people. And I think that's part of the reason he joined the military, because he had a serving mentality. He truly wanted to protect and to serve. And I think those that join the military do that. I would say growing up, he was a little mischievous. He was very curious. He constantly was asking questions and taking things apart that we couldn't then put back together. And his inquisitive mind was just one of those that I would think to myself, I never thought about doing something like that, but it's a very good exercise for us all to figure out. So, you know, growing up, he was, you know, I would say the peacemaker. You know, we have three boys, and he was the peacemaker between his oldest brother and youngest brother. And so I think that he managed that relationship very well. And I think that he genuinely loved people. When he was Zach, the one that he talks about that he wished that he could go back to, you know, he enjoyed being around friends, socializing, you know, being in sports and generally just hanging with his friends. So I think he was probably just, I'm going to say, the all-American kid. You know, he just enjoyed life. And, you know, once he started, the debilitating brain disease started to take hold, you started to see that wither away layer by layer.
He was your middle son, so he had a big brother that he admired and a younger brother that he loved. There was some competition there, though, among the boys. He was really driven to prove himself, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. You know, absolutely. He was very driven. I mean, when he put his mind to something, be it academics, be it sports, be it just, you know, playing, you know, card games with the family. Very competitive, very driven, always wanted to succeed. And as we all do, right, we all want to succeed. But yeah, he looked up to his older brother, and he very much cared for his younger brother. So yeah, he was one of those just overall really, really fun kids to have around. I loved hanging out with Zach personally. We had a lot in common. You know, we liked to do things together, a lot of exercise kind of things, hiking and weightlifting and running and all those fun things that you do. So him and I had a lot of things in common as well. So, yeah, we were blessed to have Zach. It was a few short years. 24 just isn't enough. I'm sorry. It's just not enough.
No.
But, you know, we have such great fond memories of him. And, you know, we'll never forget.
Let's talk about Zach's relationship with football. He started playing when he was 9 years old. He was so eager that he started playing a year early. His dad was the coach on the team. And from the very start, it sounds like he was really determined to make his mark, even though he was a pretty small kid, right?
Yeah, you know, he wasn't the biggest on the team, but, you know, he was mighty. And part of that, I think, was growing up with brothers. And, you know, they would have some doozy of fights. I mean, there were days that it looked like a crime scene because they'd duke it out and, you know, normal bloody noses and fat lips and stuff. And then they were best friends the next minute. So, that's the difference, I think, in boys and girls. But, yeah, he loved the sport. Oh, he just loved the sport. He loved the Green Bay Packers. He loved competing. I think the competition, was something that I think most men and women can relate to when you love a sport. And I was an athlete in high school, so I understand that love and wanting to play and wanting to be a leader on that team and wanting to succeed as a team, you know, bring the people together as a whole to win. There's just nothing like that. And I think that a lot of people are drawn to that. I think in sports in general, and it's not just football, it can be soccer and volleyball and basketball, wrestling, you know, those are the things that I think people just really enjoy and rightfully so. I mean, that's part of growing up. I think the hard part here was he wasn't the biggest, but he was mighty and he had no fear. He didn't mind taking on the 250-pound, you know, linebacker or lineman, even though he weighed 175 pounds. So, you know, he was always never the biggest guy, but he had no fear. And I think Reed uses the word reckless. I use the word fearless, because I think that is what drove Zach. Is he just didn't have fear, and he just had that passion to succeed. And he did that in everything, academics. Once he found something that he liked, he was driven to succeed.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about Zach Easter, his life and his death after suffering from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, which he developed because of those years of playing football and concussion after concussion. He took his life when he was only 24 years old, but he left behind his story and asked his mom and his girlfriend and others who loved him to make sure that his story has been told, is getting told. And it's told now through a new book by Reed Forgrave. It's called Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. Brenda Easter, Zach's mom, is here with me now, along with Reed Forgrave, author of the book. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
This hour, we're learning about the life and the death of Zach Easter, who grew up in Indianola. He loved football. He played football from the time he was 9 years old until he was 18 years old. And through those years, he experienced concussion after concussion. Eventually, that led to the development of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And those who loved him saw Zach change in front of their eyes and really disappear in front of their eyes. When he was 24 years old, he took his own life, and he left behind his story, 40 pages of an autobiography that told about all of the things that he could remember in the hopes that what happened to him wouldn't happen to anybody else in the future. With me this hour is Reed Forgrave. He's the author of Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. Also with me, Brenda Easter, Zach's mom. And I want to invite Allie Epperson into the conversation as well. Allie Epperson was Zach's girlfriend, a longtime friend, and then his girlfriend at the time of his death. And Brenda and Allie together are some of the founders of CTE Hope. Allie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And I realize this has become a real mission for you to make sure that Zach's story gets told. And I mentioned earlier that Zach learned really early on that he didn't want to talk to anybody about his concussions, about his headaches, about what was happening with his body, because he would get taken out of the football games that he loved so much. So he kept so much of this secret. And even after he stopped playing football and went to college, he continued to struggle with these concussions, even got a couple more concussions as time went on. And Allie, you were one of the first people, or maybe the very first person, that he told about what he was experiencing. Can you take us back to that time? What did he tell you?
Yeah, so we were a year apart in high school, but graduated college at the same time. And it was right after we had both graduated. And it was just one night he, you know, called me up and told me he needed to tell me something. And I really, you know, didn't expect what he told me. He basically said, I think I have something called CTE. And at that point, I had never even heard of CTE. I had no idea what it was. And me being the person I am, I'm actively on the phone with Zach trying to, you know, frantically look this up, because he starts to tell about, you know, opening up more about how he's been feeling and some of the physical and mental ailments that he hadn't told me before, and what it means to have CT, and just, you could hear the fear in his voice and in the words he was saying. And so it was a very scary time. It was a very, not only because he was suffering and was finally being truly transparent about it, but also because he was suffering from a disease neither of us really knew much about. And so you feel very helpless at that point. And I think that's really helpless is what Zach felt a lot of the last year of his life.
Absolutely. And did he swear you to secrecy? Were you supposed to not share what he was going through with anybody else?
Yes. So he really didn't want me to tell anyone, especially his family. And I think that went to him not understanding what was happening and being really scared and just wanting to figure it out, but also afraid of what he was going to find out and just didn't want anyone else involved. And, you know, that was very hard for me to deal with because, of course, I wanted to get him help. And, of course, I thought everyone should know, so we should always get help. But I was trying, you know, trusting Zach that he knew what he was doing and being open, at least with me, about how he was trying to get help. But, yes, he really didn't want anyone to know until, you know, that last summer he finally opened up to his parents and later in November allowed me to, you know, fully tell everything that he still hadn't told other people and be more transparent about it because it was clear he knew he couldn't do it on his own.
I can imagine that when he first started telling you this, did it sound far-fetched? Did you have a hard time accepting it?
I didn't remember ever having a hard time accepting it just because of who Zach was and the relationship we had. I knew that if he was telling me this and he clearly had done research and he clearly knew what he was feeling, or at least thought he was feeling more than, you know, I could ever know or anyone else, I just trusted him and I knew he'd always played sports, that he had talked about his concussions before this. He had talked about some of his issues, just not couched in the terms of CTE. And so it was never a question of believing him. I was just shocked and didn't really know what to do because, again, I'd never heard of this disease before.
Yeah. Were there things that happened that really drove home how much he was struggling to you, behavior that you observed?
Yes, there was a number of things. For one, a lot of his memory issues, which he talks a lot about in his journal, but his short-term memory was horrible at the end. And there would be times when I would be at school or whether it was college or law school later that year when we would be talking and he would repeat himself from 15 minutes ago or completely forget a story he had told me the day before. And so that was progressively getting worse. And also, as Brenda mentioned, he was a very outgoing person all through high school and really social and loved people and loved his friends. But, you know, as his disease progressed, he, you know, began to isolate himself more and more, at times even from me. And so that was really hard for him. But that was definitely something I noticed, you know, isolating himself, even in the middle of us all hanging out with friends, he would just go up to his room because it was too much for him to handle all the stimulation. And he was just feeling so awful. And didn't feel like himself. So those were two big ones I noticed even before he told me. And then when he told me, it started to make more sense.
Well, and Reed, earlier we were talking about the symptoms of CTE, and the symptoms are kind of all over the place. The mood swings, and you said earlier that whatever you have going on, it might just exacerbate something that you were already predisposed to. And for Zach, there were these mood swings, and there was the memory loss, and there were struggles with addiction, kind of wild struggles with addiction. What other symptoms, when you talk to Brenda and Miles and Allie and learn more about what he was going through, what other symptoms was he experiencing?
He referred to migraines. He referred to something that he called brain tremors, which I think Allie could probably elucidate better than I can. But from what I gather, it's sort of like a brief, debilitating, almost like lightning strike to your brain. His speech was bad. He had blurred vision at times, a lot of memory issues. What struck me most about reading specifically his journals is that you see him really ping-ponging back and forth. This isn't some never-ending descent where that goes into a dark hole and doesn't get out. You see him in his journals having all the hope in the world. I'm going to beat this thing. He's going to have this long laundry list of life goals, from quitting tobacco over the next month to being a millionaire in 10 years. you see him very determined. And then a day or two later, you see him having completely given up hope. Or in one case, in early December, a few weeks before his death, he just disappeared. He just decided to drive to Oklahoma, just hit the road and do something for himself, and ends up in Kansas City and spends the night and drives back. And his family and Allie, I know at that time, were just like, what is going on here? So it became just sort of a very inconsistent roller coaster of everything that Zach and by extension his family was going through, especially those final 6 months or so.
Yeah. And we only have a few minutes left here. And of course, as I've mentioned, Zach took his life in December. He just couldn't live the way that he was living, but he left behind this remarkable story of what he had been through. He connected all of those dots and he asked his family to tell his story. And Brenda, I know you've been working so hard to do this over the last 5 years. And I mentioned you and Allie are some of the founders of CTE Hope. You're spreading this story far and wide. What do you want other people to know, other moms and dads, other kids who want to play football? What do you want them to know?
Well, that's pretty simple. It can happen to you. It can happen to your child if you're not careful. And I think that people are still on the fence about CTE, as Reed alluded to, because we don't know a whole lot yet. We know how bad it is, but Zach's words are very powerful. His journals describe exactly how horrific the disease is. And I want parents and I want the athletes to know that it's not always the big concussion that's going to cause the long-term degenerative disease. It's also subconcussive hits. We don't know how many hits are too many for a brain. And I think the second thing I need people to really recognize, and this is something I didn't get, a concussion is a traumatic brain injury. And those three words, from a parent's perspective, I hope will change how you proceed in caring for your son or daughter in the event they get a concussion, or they just aren't acting right because maybe they've had multiple subconcussive hits that have led to a mild traumatic brain injury. It's important for families to make the right decisions, and I completely understand that. We want kids to continue to play those sports that they love, and that's why we started the foundation and the research that we're doing, but they need to do it safely. So play, but play safe. And that's all I can tell you. And watch your children diligently.
Yeah.
If you see any changes, they need to stop. They need to take a break. And they need to get medical assistance.
I can only begin to imagine how painful it must be for you to read Zach's words and think about, oh, I remember that from your perspective as a mom. And you know, I think there are some people that honestly would like to see football disappear because of these really terrible injuries that players are sustaining. How are you feeling about football in particular?
Well, personally, you know, I have a hard time watching football because every time I see, you know, tackling or, you know, the big hit, it just makes me want to vomit, to be quite frank. I'm just sick to my stomach because I know what could potentially happen. And granted, you know, there are better protocols in place today. They're trying to be more careful. I get all that, but the truth of the matter is the brain is such a sensitive and complicated muscle that we're just tipping the iceberg as to really how to correct it, you know, how to make it better and make it safe. And so it makes me sick. It makes me not really want to watch the sport, but the same thing with soccer, you know, when they're doing headbutting and things like that, it just makes me ill. But then I also have to think like this, you know what? Kids get concussions falling off their bikes. You know, adults get it by falling. They hit their head on the cement. Or, you know, we were actually working through the foundation with a young woman who bonked her head really good, just getting up from picking something off the floor. But unfortunately, she lost about 8 months of work because she had the same symptoms as Zach did. So, you know, parents and, you know, have to realize that we love the sports. People love these sports, and I want them to continue. I truly, truly do. But I need to make sure it's safe. You know, do I hate the sport? I really do want to hate the sport. But Zach loved the sport, and I loved my son. So my dilemma is simply this. I just don't need to watch it anymore, and I won't. And I think there will be other parents like me who are like, gosh, you know, this is too much. And I can't do it. And I think there are going to be some parents who will allow their kids to play and, but just watch them very carefully. And then I think there are going to be those parents that are on the fence that are like, I don't know if that's really true. A lot of people play football and they don't get CTE. And my answer to them is yet, because we don't know. Sometimes it takes people years before they realize that they have the long-term symptoms and the consequences that are going to come with that. There are people that are famous, you know, Frank Gifford's one of them, who, you know, they thought ended up with Alzheimer's, but in the truth, he had CTE when they did the evaluation of his brain. So, you know, I think football is a sport that's not going to go away. I just, again, and praying that our foundation and other scientists across the world can make it safe.
Well, Brenda Easter, thank you so much for sharing Zach's story and your story with us today.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And to be quite frank, this is my words, you know, but it's Zach's voice, and that's the gift that I can give him today. So thank you.
Thank you. And Brenda Easter is Zach Easter's mother. Allie Epperson, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much. And this is just another step in sharing Zach's story, which was his last wishes to us. So I really appreciate you having us on today.
Allie Epperson was a longtime friend of Zach's and his girlfriend when he passed away. Together, Brenda and Allie are some of the founders of CTE Hope. And Reed Forgrave, we have just about a minute left here. And you tell Zach's story beautifully, and Zach told his own story in such a remarkable way. What do you want people to take away from reading this book? What is your hope?
Look, there's a million things that this book is about thematically, whether it's about parenting or masculinity or, you know, how we raise our boys into men, how we feel about football. But ultimately, it's a story about a family's tragedy. And I hope that people just see it as a cautionary tale, not necessarily a tale where it's like you need to take away your kid's chance of ever playing football forever, but just think about it. There's a lot of nuance to this book, and I just hope that this book helps challenge people's views on football, no matter how they feel about football. I hope they just step back and consider it a little bit more.
Reed Forgrave, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Reed Forgrave is the author of the new book, Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Thanks for listening.